sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
It's really, really stressful scaling and learning your craft whilst you're actually kind of like actually doing the job. So I know this from personal pain, and I had created some of the worst learning materials on planet Earth for my teams, partly because I didn't know what I was doing, but also I'm not a natural educator. I didn't even know what the word pedagogy meant, like, until a year and a half ago.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. That was Paul Fifield. Paul is the CEO and co-founder of the Sales Impact Academy. In our conversation, we talk about Paul's new venture and how they are seeking to change how sellers acquire and apply new knowledge to their selling. Think about it more in terms of sales education versus rote sales training. We dig into the major deficiencies Paul saw in how sellers are being educated. Now this created problems for companies and sellers alike. Then we dive into what Sales Impact Academy is doing to bridge the divide between what sellers really need and what they're typically getting from the training. Paul shares three tips to make remote education highly effective for sales teams, including why you should never teach more than 2 hours a week, and why you should never go more than 10 minutes without some interactive element for students in your educational materials. So it's a fascinating discussion about how to effectively help sellers improve. And we get into all of this and much, much more. But before we get to Paul, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you subscribe, we'd certainly appreciate it if you could give us a review and let us know how we're doing. We really appreciate that. So thank you. All right, let's jump into it. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So you're joining us from where today?
From London. But as I've mentioned, I actually work East Coast hours. So for me, it's 9:30. For my fellow countrymen and women, it's 2:30.
2:30, right. All right. Well, that works, you know. It's sort of I was just hearing this morning I was listening to a podcast about the future of supersonic travel, air travel, coming back. This company Boom in the States is developing the next generation of supersonic airlines. And they're talking again about affordable 3-hour flights between London and New York.
Interesting. Well, it seems to be the only industry that's actually regressed in accomplishments.
Yeah. Well, they're saying that actually, the average flight time, at least within the United States, and I guess this is based on congestion and other things, average flight time between, any two points, let's say transcontinental, is actually, it takes more time now than it did 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is crazy, right? Yeah. And so, I mean, this, as you, who I think comes back and forth quite a bit, or would normally under normal times, is, if you could do that trip in 3 hours as opposed to 7, that'd be nice.
Sign me up. As long as it's environmentally friendly, sign me up.
Well, they've the new designs, the new fuels they're using, sustainable fuels, and so on, and apparently it'll be better, and it won't even cost. They're trying to get it so it's not an arm and a leg to get across. So, price wise, so All right, well, tell us a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about Sales Impact Academy and what you guys are doing.
Sure. Yeah, no, I'd love to. Yeah. So we're building a live learning platform, kind of like a live school, like a school online, if you like, to really simplify it. You know, as you know, Andy, there has been no structured learning, no structured education within the go-to-market space for pretty much any persona. Sales has been around as a persona probably the longest out of, you know, the modern, when you think about the sort of modern go-to-market personas, from revenue operations to customer success to all of it. But there's been no structured formal learning. The global education system, in its infinite wisdom, decided that this wasn't a profession. It's something that stupid people did when they couldn't get a degree. and it's just created chaos. And I'm trying to create a very sophisticated, large in breadth academy to support the development and learning of reps of all kind and go to market.
And which I think is fantastic, because yeah, it's definitely a need that needs to be filled and that exists. I mean, there's certainly some growth in the academic front here, certainly in the States. I don't know about in the UK in terms of more degree programs, which to me are good, in the sense that it's good to give people a sense of the profession that they're going into, and it does add some, maybe some legitimacy to it. But people, it's still a different range of things you need to learn once you actually get into the job.
Yeah, and I think, we have a learning advisor in the business. He was the vice chancellor of Cape Town University. And I put it to him, I was like, can traditional education actually solve this problem? And he said, absolutely no way. Because the pace of change in our profession in go to market is so fast that traditional education institutions just simply can't keep up. What you need is a very dynamic approach to the development of curriculum. And he's like, the traditional university education system simply won't be able to do that. And so you have this kind of big problem where traditional education can't fix it. And so so who does? And so what we're trying to come in and think, right, let's start this from scratch. How do we think about upskilling incredibly busy people, right, who've got targets to hit, who are living in a state of basically stress, which is basically most people in go-to-market, particularly SDRs, particularly sales reps. How do we create a pedagogy and a learning approach that's going to work in that environment and have impact? And it's a very different approach to learning than traditional learning.
Yeah, well, I think you've identified this sort of basic disconnect that exists, is that in most organizations, they underinvest in effectively upskilling their people. And they find it much easier to invest in sort of building, I think as you call it, epic tech stacks rather than investing in the things that will really help people do their jobs better.
Yeah, and that's cool. And that's core skills. But, I put it to people, would a highly skilled rep with a spreadsheet, a phone and an email do well? And it's like, yeah. If you had a product that's actually solving a problem, yeah, they would. Would an unskilled rep with a world-class and highly expensive tech stack do well? No.
Right.
Because there is it's a real skill. Like, there's real competencies that you need to learn to be great at any role in go-to-market. And I do have some sympathy with companies, because companies are not natural educators. I mean, I know I've had two stints as a CRO, so I'm kind of building this school, building this academy, knowing the pain on a very personal level, my own pain, because I didn't know what I was doing. I was learning on the job, and bloody hell, is it difficult to learn on the job and execute at the same time And worse than that, learn on the job when actually the ways that you learn are so random. It's like books and blog, you know, podcasts and random blog posts and events like SASTA. It's just a smorgasbord of random, unstructured knowledge, which just hits you in the face, right? And it's difficult because you don't know what's good and what's bad. And so you spend half your brain power thinking, sort of triangulating, where did this information come from? Who said this? Are they credible? And it's just mad, right? So it's really, really stressful scaling and learning your craft whilst you're actually kind of like actually doing the job. So I know this from personal pain, and I have created some of the worst learning materials on planet Earth for my teams, partly because I didn't know what
we
I
all
was
have.
Doing.
Right,
exactly. Partly I didn't know what I was doing, but also I'm not a natural educator. I didn't even know what the word pedagogy meant, like, until a year and a half ago. And I didn't even know about things like learning design, instructional design, how you think about, you know, teaching and imparting knowledge in a way that's going to be successful. So companies don't have that as a natural skill. Yeah, we're all forced to, particularly in go-to-market, we're forced to have to do that. And the results are pretty poor.
Yeah, well, I think you draw a distinction that I think is really important, because I 100% believe in this, is that you draw the distinction between education and training.
Yeah.
And to me, this is not a semantic difference. This is a substantive difference. Mm-hmm. And so tell us about that and your approach, because I think this is something that's really missing. You know, you talk about learning, but I think, you know, the actions you take are informed by the way you describe things.
Yeah.
And so if you describe something as education, it's going to inform a different set of steps that you take to help people learn as opposed to training.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, and you didn't prompt me. We hadn't actually talked about this before.
No.
But you might have noticed, looking maybe on our site, that we don't have sales training ever, like, written anywhere. None of us within the company talk about sales training. Partly because the connotations of sales training are so terrible, right? It's basically, you know, in our minds, it's probably some aging gray-haired bloke who's hasn't done sales for 15 years, rocks up with a really shit laptop and starts and 1,000 slides. And often does that in a really, really, you know, poor sort of hotel somewhere with no windows or whatever. But I guess when you're thinking about education, you're thinking about literally, how do we design this learning experience? How do we ensure that we don't create, you know, we're teaching in a like for example, we don't teach for any more than 1 hour,
mm-hmm.
and we're an online only, we're a digital first, digital only platform.
Right.
We've never done in person, and never will we, I don't think. And so we're thinking, like, you know, your brain just switches off, like. Actually, pretty much like 10, 15 minutes into a lecture delivered piece of content, your brain starts to switch off. So, you know, when you're thinking about learning design, you're like, okay, well, if that's the case, let's make sure that when we're thinking about the design of this, within the first, after the first 10 minutes of delivering some information, let's have a pause. Let's have some kind of interactive moment. Let's have a little recap.
Mm-hmm.
You think in terms of learning outcomes. What are the three major learning outcomes of this hour of kind of content? How are we going to test for that? What's the feedback loop going to be? How do we then literally create like an end of course exam? And what does that look like? And all these things, when you're thinking as an educator, I think generally are missing when you're thinking about basic training, essentially.
Right. Well, so yeah, absolutely. And yet we still have this huge investment, which I'm sure is one of the reasons I'm sure in your investor slides, it's because you've raised money from investors is the fact that, you know, hey, there's $15 billion apparently spent every year in the United States for sales training, and no one is satisfied with the outcomes.
Yeah.
I mean, I, you know, had a friend who's in a sales training business who, you know, doesn't talk to me anymore because, you know, I was in a meeting and I said, somebody had just, a client of yours just finished your training, called me up, the VP, and said, well, we just did training with this company for 3 weeks, but we still don't know how to sell.
It's crazy. But I think, you know, it would be unfair of me and wrong of me to say that all training is bad.
Of course.
All training content is bad.
I think it's how it's delivered.
Exactly. That's the thing.
Right.
And it's the critical missing component. It might be the world's best content on what you're teaching, but if you deliver it in this kind of intensive 1 day, 3 day, 5 day period, there's this great Mark talks about this, Mark Roberge talks about this, and as you know he's on my board,
right?
When you're learning if you're learning golf, right, what you do, and I think he's a big golf guy, I'm not really a golf guy, but I get the principle of what you're saying, is like what you should do to make it effective is focus on one specific skill and master that. So maybe it's the way that you hold the club. So let's get really good at that. But what sales training typically is, the experience is like, okay, stand here, hold the club like this, hold your shoulders like this, do that, do this, do that, and do this, and do that, and go.
Right.
That's essentially the sort of almost equivalent. And you're not learning. Now, all those things that you've just been told might be great, but if you're not being taught in the way that human beings learn, it's literally a complete waste of time.
Well, and it doesn't, the trouble with most, in my mind, and most training is that, yeah, if we're trying to upskill people, what we're basically doing is we're embarking on change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's some very fundamental rules about change management that, mm-hmm. and one of them is, and I think this emanated from originally from some people at MIT, which was you do one change, and sort of along the lines we said, and you do it until you master it. And you don't mm-hmm. add a second order of change until you've mastered mm-hmm. the first one.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's not only the delivery of it, but going back to my point about these are busy people who, unfortunately, and this is an unfortunate part of the industry, is that most sales reps and most SDRs have the sword of Damocles holding, you know, over them. If they miss their number two months in a row, they're out, fired. It's mm-hmm. brutal. It's brutal. That's their income gone. That's food on the table gone. So if you take that individual out the picture for a week, do you think they're going to be in a, even just that alone is just stupid, right? Because they're just going to be, you know, looking at their phone, checking their emails, wanting to stay on top of their pipelines, all of that kind of stuff. And people go out and get completely shit-faced in the evening. So they're hungover as well. Just throw that into the mix.
Well, these
week-long training weeks are just, I mean, maybe good for team bonding, but terrible for learning.
Right. I think it's still, though, I mean, I think this is an issue. I'm wondering how you're thinking about this. Because I'll go back to the original point. Is I think that, unfortunately, that most senior leaders in an organization want to do the minimum for sales in order to sort of keep it going in terms of investment in upskilling, investment in helping improve performance in multiple dimensions. And I'll just give an example. You know, I know it's outside your purview, but it's, yeah, I believe, especially in larger sales organizations, is they should have a mental health professional on staff,
mm-hmm.
Just like sports psychologists exist in mm-hmm. professional sports teams.
Yeah.
And the fact that senior leaders can't see their way past the end of their nose to see that this would be a huge benefit, but, you know, because they can't, you know, CFO, well, what's the return on this?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they're not willing to even experiment to invest. And I think this is sort of endemic with sales is, and I think a challenge for you is, okay, how do you get people to buy into the fact that, yeah, you're only doing an hour at a time, but cumulatively, it still requires an investment of time and mm-hmm. an investment of patience in people that they're going to improve.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because most sales are saying, well, yeah, let's bring in the trainers. We'll do a week. And now,
yeah,
voila, everybody's going to be better. We've made this investment.
Yeah.
As opposed to saying, well, we're sort of going to, I'm going to say drip this out, but we're going to create this culture of continuous learning,
yeah.
And yeah. The results are going to be a little bit harder to see initially, but cumulatively, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you how we're thinking about that. And this has evolved just through our own experience and our own learning of how we best have impact. And what we're finding is, and again, I sort of look at, you know, other educators in the space, even online, mm-hmm. and some of their courses are like 12 weeks, and it's like it's over. That's a long time. That's 3 months almost. Mm-hmm. And it's like the courses that are almost the most popular that we do are 4 hours long over 2 weeks. So we only ever teach 2 hours per week per course. Mm-hmm. And we also teach at one specific part in time in the clock, which is 8 o'clock in Pacific, 11 o'clock Eastern, 4 p.m. in the UK and 5 p.m. in Europe. And what it means is, you can have entire teams, and this is why we're doing so well in the enterprise so early in our, you know, our own life cycle as a company. We're only 2 years in, but we're, you know, we're winning, you know, like HubSpot's our global customer.
As I expect it would be.
Right. And, you know, but other large companies like Shopify and others, mm-hmm. they can have their teams distributed all over those regions, Canada, North America, like all of South America, Africa, if you've got people down there, Europe, UK, in classes learning at exactly the same time.
Right.
So that's really, really powerful. Mm-hmm. But the courses that are really having impact and fast are the ones that are short bursts of learning around a very specific topic. So going back to how you're holding the golf club, right? So one example recently is with Kevin Dorsey. He has a 4-hour cold calling masterclass course, right? And it's 4 hours of learning, Monday and a Wednesday, over 2 weeks. And by the end of that, you are significantly better at doing cold calling as an SDR or an AE. But it's completely focused on one specific skill that you need as a subset of all the skills that you need. And we had one customer literally double meetings booked within weeks of the course finishing. But it was a short burst of learning around a very focused topic. And that, you know, and we have plenty of those short burst courses of 4 hours, and they really, really work.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of sort of standard time so teams are learning together. I think that's great. And it's, yeah, if you get companies away from let me ask the question I was leaning into here is, so what are you doing for managers? Because I think the weak link in the chain in terms of overall sales performance improvement are managers, and not because of personal failings on the part, but they have not been trained. They've not received the tools that they need to receive in order to become effective coaches.
They've often never done it before. That's the thing.
Well, yeah, they've never been managers before, right? And
that is very common.
Right. And so yet we promote people into these roles and say, well, okay, now you're in charge of improving the performance of these, you know, 5 to 10 individuals. And it's like, well, how do I do that? Other than, okay, I'm going to make sure they make all their calls. I mean, that's not really the tool.
Yeah. You really are teeing me up here, Andy.
And I'm not trying to, because as you said, we've never spoken before, but yeah, like minds, I think.
That's it. We have an entire school. So the way that we structure the academy is across 6 schools. So management and leadership, B2B marketing, sales, prospecting, customer success, and we're going to be next year building out a really big RevOps school. Mm-hmm. So there are 6 schools within the academy. And so we have an entire one dedicated to management and leadership. And we actually have a brilliant course in there called Practical Guide for First-Time Managers. It ran for the first time about a month ago and went down an absolute storm. In fact, I kind of want to take it myself because I manage quite a lot of people, but I've never had any formal training. I've kind of learned over the years. Mm-hmm. But it was brilliant. We have another course called Lead Coach Win, which is around the fundamentals and foundations of good coaching. And there is so much curriculum that we're going to be creating for not just first-time managers, but, you know, managers that are managing managers and, you know, VP level, you know, execs, C level execs, and also CEOs. There is a huge amount of curriculum there that we will be creating around supporting, you know, people in management positions. No question.
Well, if I can put in a request, is Yeah. What's neat is curriculum on understanding how people develop and get better. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's science behind this. And again, in professional sports, we talked before, I'm a huge soccer fan. People that listen to the show know that I'm a huge soccer fan, a Liverpool fan. And you look at the specialized coaches that are on the staffs of all these professional sports teams. And these are dedicated to help both the individuals and the collective perform better, right?
Yeah, that's leverage.
And it's embarrassing that in business, we haven't adopted any of these practices.
It's crazy, because also in tech, it's a people business.
Right.
It's literally people. Like, and they're your most expensive asset. And if you get them working really well, they're the most incredible asset, because they'll perform and your business results being incredible. There's a really interesting, we have actually a whole course with one of the top sports coaches in Europe, a guy called Sir Clive Woodward. He teaches a course with us called DNA of a Champion. And he used to be the head coach of the England rugby team. Mm-hmm. You know, he won a World Cup with them. He ran the Olympics team for three Olympics, got our best results ever in about 100 years at the London 2012 Olympics. And he's bringing a lot of what he learned in elite sports into the sort of business world. And he said in sports, it's like sort of 99% practice, 1% performance. And in business, it's like 99% performance and 1% practice. Mm-hmm. And he said that is something that's very wrong here. Those two worlds can't be that far apart. And I thought it was kind of a really interesting way to sort of think about it. But there are so many instances, Andy, where this when you actually take a step back and think about it, it's kind of crazy. So I'll give you an example.
Sure.
And we're going to be building curriculum around this as well. So SDRs typically coming straight out of college, straight into the business world, and they're expected within weeks to be having, engaging conversations, sometimes with C-level people. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what? And this is something that's being requested a lot by our customers, and we have over 200 now, is just some basic business acumen. Like, it's crazy to expect these young people, smart young people, coming into the business world, knowing how the business world operates, knowing what the C-suite even is, right?
Agree, 100%.
Knowing what a public company is, knowing what a private company is, knowing how companies are run and how they're structured and management structures and how big teams are and how many people typically would report into a manager. And all these things that we've picked up just over the years of being in business, that we just forget that these young people don't have any of that knowledge. And so we're going to be starting to create curriculum just around pure business acumen. And then you take it a step further. Most maturing sales teams, they start to specialize, right? They start to verticalize around automotive or finance or not-for-profits. And the same thing happens. Like, reps will go, right, you're going to be looking after finance now. And it's like, well, I don't know anything about finance. It's like, well, just learn. And then what happens is you spend 6 months spinning your wheels, getting shit results, because you have no idea about the finance industry.
Right.
You don't know the language, the problems. You can't have meaningful conversations with anyone in that industry. And the company itself that's trying to sell to that sector is burning through leads, burning through SQOs,
right,
wondering what's going on. For the patient companies that eventually, where the salesperson starts succeeding, great, it's finally working. Our vertical strategy is finally working. But most, they'll probably start firing people. And that is just like literally in every which way you look at that, it is madness.
Well, and I would add something to that, because I think that's fantastic. I think the tendency, and this is information, this is knowledge absolutely needed, right? Especially, you said, young sellers coming in have no idea how business world operates. I mean, I know it took me a better part of a year, my first year, to sort of understand that. And I only was able to learn quickly early in my career because I was selling to entrepreneurs, small, mid-sized business owners who were teaching me about business, right? But absent that, it would have been a much longer learning curve on that.
Yeah,
so I think that's incredible. What I'm interested in, though, from my perspective, is, and this is, I think, is an issue in sales, is and maybe it comes down to mindfulness or so on. But you know, I think a big part of, we want to systematize everything. We want to make everybody, you know, tell everybody that, okay, these customers are all sort of alike, right? And you're going to have similar experiences talking to them. Mm-hmm. And what happens is, you know, then our sellers become too scripted and too rote. Because to me, a biggest part of business acumen is not knowing how two similar customers are the same. It's how they're different.
Right.
And be able to spot the differences, because those differences then become the opportunity for the seller.
Right. So this idea
of, you know, how do we help managers initially to move away from this cookie cutter approach to sales, which is increasingly sort of happening, and saying, you know, situational awareness is really what we need to be able to train people and to get our sellers to be mindful about, because those are the opportunities.
Absolutely. And if you have a product and it's solving a certain problem in an industry, some of those prospects will have solved that problem, and you've got to know who's got the problem solved and who hasn't. For sure. No, you make an excellent point.
Yeah. I mean, I think that for me, I think one of the values of, you know, putting things in sort of the educational context as opposed to a training context. The training context, again, this assumption is that we're teaching you how things are and everything's sort of going to be this way, you know, in the situations you encounter. Whereas education for me is, you know, why do you go to college? We go to college to learn how to think. Mm-hmm. And this level of intentionality that's required to be consistently successful at this profession isn't being emphasized enough, at least in my mind.
Yeah,
and this is what we need to teach people, is that you know, selling is a very creative profession. It's not an assembly line. You want to do an assembly line job, then go work an assembly line.
Yeah, it's creative. It's consultative. You're trying to understand like business pain, and that's a consultation.
Yeah, and so I think that, and I'm just wondering how you're sort of addressing this and what you're doing is that, in my mind, after, you know, all the years I've been in this, is that words matter. And the way you describe things matter. And I think one of our challenges is, how do we reset mindsets about what the job of selling is, for instance? You know, if you think your job as a seller is, my job is to go out and persuade someone to buy my product, then you take one set of actions. If you think your job is to go out to listen, understand what's most important to that buyer, and then help them get that, you take a different set of actions, because your mindset is completely different. One path leads to the sort of traditional salesy, pushy, persuasion-based selling that that buyers find so horrible. And the other leads to the consultative, hey, I'm really here to help you make a better decision, achieve better outcomes.
Well,
it seems like this is fundamental, and that we need to be able to somehow address this in the way we educate sellers. One is your job, the other is not your job.
Yeah. I guess we're not explicit within the academy on that point. We're just the best practices that we teach is exactly that. It's consultative, it's listening to pain. It's also knowing that it's okay to say, you know what, there's no fit here. I don't think I can help you. And I don't want to waste your time really any longer and move on. That's great. That's a really great outcome for both the prospects and the seller. Like, fantastic.
Part of my overall mission is to, you know, help to continue to sort of legitimize sales as a noble profession.
Yes.
As a profession, full stop. I've met some of the smartest and kindest and most empathetic people in the sales and go-to-market profession. It is a highly cerebral, highly complex profession, and I love it. But so much of the perception of sales all over the world is that it's not that. That it is this more snake oil salesman approach. And that's really, really sad. And I lay a lot of the blame for that at the feet of the global education system, who ignored it. And I think that had played a huge role in this very negative perception of sales.
Well, yes, I think that's part of it. But I think that, the stereotypes of, you know, salespeople being pushy and sleazy and salesy and untrustworthy are unfair, but we created those perceptions. I mean, it's not like they're completely unwarranted. It's because, you know, there's large segments of this profession that thought and still continue to believe and train sellers and encourage sellers to act a certain way that buyers find distasteful. And that are, I lump those into a category I call salesy behaviors. And, you know, a buyer will never ask a seller to be more salesy, right? I mean, a buyer would never say, hey, you know, Paul, I'd love your product, love to sign up, but, you know, you're just not salesy enough. Could you be more salesy?
Yeah.
They're never going to say that. And yet so much of training doubles down on that. And managers double down on that, yeah. Especially when it gets to the end of a period and they think they need to close more deals, and they encourage sellers to act in a way that A, aren't effective, but B, that buyers dislike.
Yeah.
And we can stop that, right? It doesn't have to, we can just stop because these behaviors don't help.
Yeah. There is absolutely an element to that, no question. Yeah.
And so I think that I agree with you. I mean, I'm part of my new book that's coming out here shortly is, part of his mission to say, look, we can start solving this problem, mm-hmm. because these behaviors that buyers don't like, that they identify with, that become part of the stereotype, they're of no value to us as sellers. Mm-hmm. So we can stop them.
Yeah.
And let's do that, right? Let's draw a line in the sand and just say, you know, from here forward, these things we're just not going to do anymore.
Yeah.
And if we have alternatives, such like Sales Impact Academy and other places where people can learn other approaches, then, yeah, we can start turning this around.
Yeah.
But we need to have the commitment of sales leaders to it as well, because, you know, these behaviors that you know, our buyers don't like and that we get tarred with, the perception of, they're not innate human behaviors. These are learned behaviors.
Yeah. I totally agree. But I think, like I say, it really does all, for me, come back down to the fact that there's been no structured learning in this industry. So people just can't go into it not knowing. And that's crazy. You know, you imagine what happens if you strip back all of the structured learning in the finance industry or the legal industry and just people just start doing law. it was just absurd to think that, that would ever happen. But that's what happens in sales and go-to-market. So, of course, bad practices are going to evolve in that complete void in the profession.
Well, I think that's that. Absolutely. 100% agree. But I think there's also a combination of coming from management is that I think more than individual sellers, I don't think individual sellers, you know, come up with, as I said, innately and intuitively come up with these behaviors that are bad. I think it's encouraged by management, especially, as I said, in times when they think they're not getting the performance they want, the end of period, you know, we're not closing up deals. You know, you send your sellers out with best of intentions to help buyers and create a trust-based relationship. And then last day of the month rolls around. It's like, hey, what can I do to get you to sign the deal today?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've just wasted them. you know, your true colors show suddenly.
Yeah.
And then the customer's perception of you never changes from that point.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You said partnership, but it's really transactional. I get it. And so we bring these things on ourselves. But I think it starts up the chain more than it does for the individual contributors.
Yeah. Well, they need education too.
They do. Yeah. And I'm glad you're – hopefully that's something you'll address with them. So – Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining me. It's been fascinating to learn about what you're doing. And if people want to learn more about Sales Impact Academy, where can they go?
They can go to our website, which is www.salesimpact.io.
Perfect. All right. Well, Paul, thank you so much.
Andy, thanks. It's been great.
Okay, friends, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank my guest, Paul Fifield, for sharing his insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thank you for doing that. And thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales. We're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.